The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome back as we head into Hour 3 this Tuesday. We do so as we do every Tuesday with Hugh Hallman. He is the former mayor of Tempe. He is an attorney in town as well as a civic activist and educator. Funny thing about Hugh, you know, people sometimes ask me what certain guests are like and certain people I know. Everything you need to know about Hugh, what you see is what you get. His, you know, and as you can imagine, you know, he comes in. What did you bring in? Four copies of the Journal of the American Medical Association, four studies from think tank. I mean, that's Hugh. He's kind of like me. We delight in our nerdiness, don't we?
Absolutely. It's the only way to get dates.
Yeah, right. Okay.
That's why I got married a long time ago and had one date.
Held on to her like grim death, huh? Not letting her go. Hugh Hallman, you and I were both interested in a piece in the City Journal, and we'll start here. We haven't done COVID in a long time. School's starting again. That's right. School's starting again. And so, of course, because we have to plague the kids and engage in some form of Munchausen by proxy syndrome, getting our kicks out of beating up on the children, or at least giving them the attention of our medical professionals and health professionals when that's the last thing that needs to be done. You and I should probably talk a little bit about COVID. There was a new piece in the City Journal, which comes out from the Manhattan Institute. City Journal is probably one of the two or three best conservative, serious conservative journals. By serious, I mean, you know, they do long pieces. And masks.
And use big words.
And they sometimes use big words. Masks still don't work is the title of this piece. More than 2 years on, the best scientific evidence says that masks don't stop COVID. And public health officials continue to ignore it. And this author, Jeff Anderson, he's been a guest on the show. We should have him back. Surveys from San Diego sweeping across the country, blessedly not here. Mask mandates for kids are coming back, Hugh. You've built schools. You still build schools. You know a lot about education. You know a lot about children. You know a lot about raising children. Are we ever going to stop torturing the children? And also, attendant to that, are we ever going to stop with this COVID nonsense?
And the answer likely is no, at least not for a while. And it makes me really sad because this actually started from a conversation I had with a physician about the fact that in doctors' offices, they still glove, they still mask up, they still use the shields and other things. But that's in large part because they are surrounded by people who are sick. And it's not necessarily a bad idea to do that as a general matter. And once we've broached the subject of being separated from our physicians by this kind of gear, taking it off is a little harder because it's not just COVID. It is all the other diseases that visit upon them. And like parents who send their children for the first few years to school and have petri dishes come back to them, growing all kinds of diseases that they infect the family with, physicians and their families go through the same thing. So that the common cold is coming into the office every day, the flu and everything else. And so my wife, who's a physician, she talks about the fact that she washes her hands about 100 times a day. So before and after every clinical visit with a patient and many times in between. And so the kinds of protections physicians should have make some sense. And yet here we're trying to transport the gear that we use in the most extreme circumstances to schools. And for about 2 years now, we've talked about the fact that there is one group of people we know who are not really at risk for COVID infection and bad outcomes. Those are people under the age of 18. And the data still continues, and I'm sure you just pulled some up because you've talked about the fact that there are more people who have died from being reinfected by COVID after being vaccinated twice and double boosted than all of the children in the entire United States who've died at all.
Just in Illinois.
Just in Illinois is your example. You can pick
by a factor of four.
many other states where that is true. Now, of course, the size of the population matters, and Illinois happens to have a large population. That's why they get so many of those electoral votes when it really matters, right? Well, California's got it's absurd that we continue to point to children as a vector, which then teaches them that they are the danger to society, not a great sort of burden to place on kids. And we are now, for the first time in our history, using children as the means to protect adults. We are vaccinating children who have a higher risk from the vaccination than from the disease itself in order to protect adults who might get the disease potentially carried by children and have a bad outcome. That's a very different universe in which we're living. We used to vaccinate kids against polio to protect the kids from getting polio, not to protect the parents who might get infected by the kids from getting polio. And now we've reversed that. The same is now true with masks and the use of masks in schools in California, where they're being mandated yet again. Masks have a very checkered history now. We've got the data that shows unless you're using an N95 mask properly, the other masks that are out there, including those nice blue and white medical masks or the yellow ones or even the black ones, those don't actually provide much protection at all. And in fact, that's if they're worn correctly. Most people, number one, don't wear them correctly. And many people reuse the same mask repeatedly. I had breakfast with a friend who was wearing a double mask. And the mask, as she was speaking, kept falling below her nose, and she'd have to pull it back up. And it was worn in the spots where she'd obviously had to continue to touch it repeatedly to keep putting it back on her face, all of which demonstrates that's ridiculous. It's not useful in preventing the spread of the disease either from that person to others or from others to that person. And so now we're imposing on kids, and we see it. The City Journal article is terrific. The places where we're seeing the virtue signaling yet again by people who want to show that they are playing along to protect us all and imposing on children these obligations and undermining their mental and emotional health. Because we've also seen the data. Significant increase in suicide rates, in ideation, in bad outcomes from children who have been subjected to this stuff. They've been imposed upon and told that they are vectors for a disease that are going to kill their grandparents. They have been told to wear masks when it doesn't really help. They've been vaccinated and subject to other kinds of things, stay-at-home orders, all sorts of things. And the results of that is devastating to a generation of kids who now we're starting to talk about a learning loss. You can't lose what you never had.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
We just had a failure to teach for 2 years, and now we've got a whole generation of kids who were 5, 6, 7, 8 who never had the emotional activities that are important in growing as human beings. We're going to see that visit upon us for a long time. And their older brethren, their cisterns and brethrens, how shall we say, who also were subjected to this, and we're seeing all kinds of dysfunctional social behaviors out in our society. It was bad enough for adults who had already been acculturated to being human beings. We're seeing a very different result in children, and we're doing it again. And the answer I really have to give you to your question is, I don't think we see an end to this until enough of us start pointing out the fact that the adults who are imposing these kinds of activities are damaging children beyond belief, and that the damage that they're doing to them by trying to save themselves with masks is significant, horrific, and needs to stop.
Well said, Hugh. I want to talk about some of the sociological effects as well in a moment, but a terrible thought occurred to me while I was listening to you.
I have that effect on a lot of people.
No, but a terrible conclusion. About the future of our success as a society, which is this. A lot of people take it in an education context with the issue of school choice, which we're celebrating today with the signature of the ESA legislation that the governor put down today. I heard someone earlier today saying the answer to X problem, Y problem, Z problem with failing schools is choice, school choice, you know, that because the schools will change when they see parents making the decisions to leave the poor ones. My fear is we're not going to see that, and we're not seeing that, because one of the hopes we had had when it came to COVID was that, well, we'll look at the states that were, you know, more lax in their mandates. We'll look at the states that were more latitudinarian, and we'll look at the ones like California, New Jersey, Michigan, New York that were pretty hardcore about it, and we'll come to a conclusion as to what worked. We're going to a break. We'll pick up on this when we come back. I don't think Americans operate that way anymore. I think what happens is we face what's called invincible ignorance, where people do not want to look at the data and change course. They're fixed on an idea, in French, idea fix, and nothing, no social statistics, no social science, no evidence, no empirical studies will change those committed to the idea. So we'll look at Florida and we'll look at California. We'll see the same results, but California won't change. That's my fear. Can we address some of this when we come back?
Absolutely.
I'm Seth, he's Hugh. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. The song you're missing if you're listening on podcast is Do You Believe in Magic by John Sebastian of the Love and Spoonful, who wrote a lot of great music, including the theme to maybe the first sitcom dealing with education, Welcome Back, Cotter. Probably the first sitcom dealing with education, where the teacher was the hero. Mr. Cotter was the hero.
Gabe Kaplan.
Abe, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Gabe Kaplan.
Gabe Kaplan,
right. And any event, irrespective of nothing, I was making the point that we wished people were more open to reason, social science, social studies, empirical evidentiary results, whether it comes to education outcomes, whether it comes to public health outcomes. I was saying before the break, you know, people said, we'll look at Florida, we'll look at California, we'll see who does better, and then we'll tailor. We don't tailor. We don't see whose ideas were better, who had better outcomes. We double down too many times, unfortunately, which is why I never thought, while I love school choice and I support it, I never thought it was the be-all and end-all. You still have the two other C's, which is content and character, that are elemental, I think, to a good educational outcome, which is why we try and pass certain legislation from time to time to fix even the schools parents do leave for others. Anyway, Hugh, my point is invincible ignorance. People who are not willing to look at any evidence whatsoever, they will discount any evidence that doesn't substantiate their preconceived notions. And so I think we're going to be on this COVID cycle for an awfully long time.
And I'll go narrowly and broadly on that. First, narrowly. Welcome to the human condition. Yeah. And the reality is that most of us get ideas in our head that are not well supported by data, typically. And we then cling to those and ignore 95% of the data to cling to those things that we have found moving. Explains love, doesn't it? Well, you know, look at some of the dysfunctional you see out there, but that is the human condition. And that is a problem across the board. That's what explains why we are now in a worse condition, I think, in the United States in our politics, because we've had a mechanism, a vehicle, social media tools, Twitter and Facebook and other things, that push us even farther to those extremes and to hang on to ideas despite the information and data that might overturn those ideas, because the clickbaiting that goes on, those things have algorithms that drive us further into that same position and don't expose us to the different opinions. The advantage of the old corporate media style was that at least you had three television channels plus a local in most big cities and a couple of newspapers. And there was some sense that they had to supply some balance. Now, we all know that NBC tended to be more middle, CBS tended to be more liberal, ABC was somewhere in between those two. Those are examples, and that's overstated. But it was not hard to understand the bias of Dan Rather relative to
Tom Brokaw.
To Tom Brokaw.
Back in the day, right.
But farther back, it was really hard to tell that Walter Cronkite was a lefty liberal. And we've moved in that direction where that news media used to supply us with a greater balanced position and data that would cause us to think about our own positions. And now we're to the extremes of that, where social media is feeding intentionally to us just the stuff that agrees with us because it understands through that mathematical model what we like. and the advertisers getting the opportunity to sell you.
Yeah, they may get a penny
out
of it, right.
They keep you there by giving you stuff you want to read, see, and think about. So you're being used as a means to sell stuff, and the way they're hooking you is to reinforce your own opinions. So we're not exposed broadly. This show is a contrast to the typical talk radio, because you talk to people who have very different opinions than yours, and you let them air those and use that as an opportunity to expand people's thinking and, frankly, understand the other side so you can better understand what your own position should be. That's a rarity in this business. It is not what you're hearing on most stations. Well, that's the general piece of it. The worst piece, the specifics with respect to why we're going to have trouble on COVID and every other topic now, is because the federal government is the greatest source of funding for studies and for our education system. So we have not just a defense industrial complex. We now have an education industrial complex that is fed and run by the federal government. And if you do not go along, you don't get funding. And that is true of the scientific industrial complex, of which the COVID industrial complex is now a part of it, that medical complex, where massive amounts of money are now being spent, but only on the studies that confirm the direction and bias of the people who have been trained in these things. And as our universities have gone left and scientific research has gone left and the funding has gone left, you're not going to likely see studies that challenge the narrative that we should be getting vaccinated, revaccinated, boosted and boosted. There are very few and far between kinds of studies coming out. And I've only been able to find one that has now examined why we are seeing reinfection rates with COVID with people who have been vaccinated and double boosted. And the explanation appears to be that the vaccination immunity that's developed is a very narrow immunity, because it's being driven by a single spike protein in most instances that's triggering a response of our immune system to develop a very narrow band of immunity. And as the SARS-CoV-2 virus has mutated to have different features of it, it's outside that narrow band. So you're more easily reinfected. The natural immunity one develops from an original infection is much broader, because you're being exposed to all features of that COVID virus, that SARS-CoV-2 virus, and it's developing a broad range response in your immune system. So as that virus mutates, it's more likely that the original response system that you've developed is broad enough to continue to protect you for a longer period of time over a broader range of mutations. And that's why it appears we're seeing reinfections after reinfections and spikes after spikes of COVID of a much milder symptom, as Lewis explained, my middle son, my youngest twin, explained months and months, years ago, that the biological response tends to require that if a virus or bacterium is going to succeed, it has to mutate to be less deadly and spread more easily. And that's exactly what we've seen here. We saw it with AIDS, HIV. We've seen it with this and every other version of these kinds of things, because if you're successful, you mutate the mutated versions of you that spread more easily but don't kill their hosts survive. The ones that kill their hosts don't pass on. And so this is a natural process we're seeing. And yet we have caused ourselves a longer COVID nightmare by using vaccines that have a very narrow immune response. Well, now we're out there trying to create new versions of vaccines to respond to the new versions of the virus that are going to have the same feature. They're going to be narrow range, and we're going to continue in this process, which then gives the left more cover to keep doing what they're doing, make kids wear masks, and the federal government continue to fund trillions of dollars now into the COVID industrial complex. Here's the question. Why are we still giving hospitals 20% kickers for COVID patients? There's no justification for it at all.
We'll talk more about that when we come back. A few thoughts to add to that. Thank you for that. I'm Seth. He's Hugh Hallman. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. Hugh Hallman is our guest. You were just talking about how once you take a federal subsidy or once you rely on the federal government for funding, it can be all-consuming. It can require you to change mission, and it can lead you to doing what the government wants you to do rather than what you originally were set up and established to do. It's a long and old story with nonprofits where the temptation is always the government grant. My gosh, HHS has a ton of them. So does the Department of Education. And it's real easy to lose your mission once you start taking the Dane Geld, the government subvention. There's, as far as I know, only one college in the entire United States that does not ask you your race when you apply to that college. It's Hillsdale. They don't. They are the only college that doesn't ask you your race because they don't have to. The reason they don't have to is they don't take a nickel or a penny from the federal government. That's true independence. As a result, you probably have one of the most open-minded or at least free, intellectually free campuses in the country over at Hillsdale. That's just one illustration of it, Hugh. But I wonder if some of this problem might be arrested or dealt with a little bit better if there were serious or at least true accountability. Accountability for being wrong. You're an attorney, a practicing attorney. If you continually gave the wrong advice to clients, you'd be out of business. There's just no question. The community of attorneys would certainly have a whisper campaign or turn against you. The community of clients would stop hiring you. You'll find this with individuals and their doctors on a one-on-one, on a one-to-one basis. Very little of this is true when it comes to education, when it comes to political analysis, or when it comes to social public health policy. Do you know the name Albert Bourla? He is the head of Pfizer. He's the CEO of Pfizer. He tweeted this on 4/1/21. May I? Quote, excited to share that updated analysis from our phase 3 study with BioNTech also showed that our COVID-19 vaccine was 100% effective in preventing COVID-19 cases in South Africa. 100%, he repeats. Pfizer.com, he says. That was on 4/21. Yesterday, the head of Pfizer tweeted, I would like to let you know that I have tested positive for COVID-19. I am thankful to have received 4 doses of the Pfizer BioNTech vaccine. Now, a year ago, he was telling us that vaccine was 100% effective in preventing you from getting COVID. There will be no accountability here any more than there will be for Joe Biden or Anthony Fauci or this really whole health industrial complex you were talking about. Seems to me if there were accountability, and I can't even begin to imagine how we would go about doing it, except through demand, public demand. If there were accountability, maybe the nonsense would cease a little bit quicker.
We are the ones that are obligated to hold those who are ruling us accountable. No. And our gravest challenge is that we have now splintered into little camps that are driven by the view of 100%. If somebody doesn't agree with me 100%, I can't be supportive of them. I don't want to know them. And all the other ills that I think are visiting upon us from the introduction of social media as the tool to drive our political discussions. During Ronald Reagan's reign of terror, we talked about a big tent Republican Party, that there were differences of opinion. That didn't mean there were differences of principle. We saw different ways to get to a goal. We generally had agreement on what the goals were, but we didn't always agree on the means to get there. We did, however, agree that the ends don't justify the means. The ends had to be a quality and a character that we could support. That no longer is the case. And we are seeing people use extreme means to carry out ends that they think are justified at the expense of retaining the community fabric we have that could at a point be made up of different colors and textures. I long for the days of a larger tent Republican Party because that was the basis on which we could hold majorities. I lived through the time when we had the fewest number of House members in the 60s. We were down to, I think, 146 House members who were Republicans. I fear we are going to cause ourselves that same problem if we can't understand that it does take a majority of people to create the opportunity. I'd like to come back and talk about how we bring that back together so we can hold government accountable and avoid these kinds of ridiculous subsidies that are going to continue to cause our children terrible, terrible problems.
And impoverish us as a country. Yeah, let's do that when we come right back, and we will be right back. Portions of the show are brought to you by Balance of Nature. I take it every single day. Pure, potent plant power. Equivalent of 10 servings of fruits and vegetables in a single daily dose. Balanceofnature.com for your immunity, your health, and energy. Balanceofnature.com. Make sure to use discount code BALANCE. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. If you're looking for a remarkable investment opportunity with a great return for investors, check out my friends at YRefi. What they're offering is a fixed no-load interest rate up to 10.25% return for investors, all in a secure and collateralized portfolio. YRefi is a due diligence approved firm. As I say, run by really good people, investors doing really well by doing good for others. And you can be part of that too. Check them out at investyrefi.com. The word invest, the letter Y, R-E-F-Y.com, or you can call them at 855-316-3087, 855-316-3087. Local company, you can go visit them. They won't give you a sales pitch. They'll just tell you about what they do and let it speak for itself. Hugh Hallman has been my guest this hour, and we went to break on an interesting and provocative point you were making, Hugh. You were thinking about, you were talking about Republican majorities. And it's an incredible thing to think about. You take a big year like 1964, which I think is what you were referencing going into the break.
And I was wrong. It wasn't 146.
It was 140.
Republicans. Against how many Democrats?
140 Republicans were in the House of Representatives in 1964 against 295, practically 300 Republicans.
Democrats.
Excuse me, Democrats, yes. 140 Republicans to 295 Democrats, almost 300 Democrats. From that, did you want to say something or do you want me to say something?
I'd let you start.
I've been revisiting not only the Goldwater campaign of 1964, but an interesting campaign in 1960 that very few people actually remember or know much about in the Republican Party, which was the nomination fight between Richard Nixon and Barry Goldwater in 1960. Paul Fannin and John Rhodes put Barry Goldwater up as a presidential candidate against Richard Nixon at the convention in 1960, and Barry Goldwater immediately came to the stage, seeing he would not have enough delegates to beat Richard Nixon, and said, "I withdraw my name. I thank my friends Paul and John, but I am not going to." This is his famous speech where he said, "Let's grow up conservatives." Because a lot of the conservative coalition was not as for Nixon as they were for Goldwater. But Goldwater didn't have the horses, and he knew it. And he said, "Let's grow up because we have a blueprint to fight." And the blueprint, he said it, the blueprint is socialism. He says, "Today's Democratic Party," it's a great speech, "today's Democratic Party has abandoned the dignity of man," three things, "the dignity of man, our economic system of success, and now stands for making America a second-tier power." That was Barry Goldwater in 1960. He said, "This is not your father's Democratic Party. This is the Democratic Party," he said, "of Bowles, Galbraith, and Walter Reuther." These are names no one will remember anymore, or very few people will remember. Chester Bowles was the governor of Connecticut, the equivalent of Gavin Newsom. Walter Reuther was the head of the auto union. And of course, Galbraith was the Harvard economist. And, you just switch those names out, you could be talking today. But Goldwater's point was this. You take your licks, you take your wounds, you realize the entire country, never mind the entire party, doesn't see things the way you do. This is our guy, and we're going to take maybe our second choice to beat our first worst. And anyway, that was the pitch Goldwater made. And 4 years later, he was rewarded, of course, with the nomination, and he had to fight the other side then to try and get the moderates to come and join him. Moderates like the governor of Pennsylvania, was it William Scranton, and governor George Romney of Michigan, and Nelson Rockefeller of New York. Goldwater was an interesting pivot point in this, is all I'm
trying to say.
Who
did not come to help. Yeah. And that is, the great arc and lesson of Barry Goldwater's life.
Yeah.
As people now refer to him who are in the Republican Party, that he's somehow a rhino, or that Ronald Reagan is a rhino. Yeah. They created the platform on which the current Republican Party is arguing about policy. And the difference between both of those gentlemen and what we have today is a graciousness and a welcoming to anybody who understands and seeks the same ends, even if they disagree about the means. And I think we have lost our way in that big discussion about what are the policy points we all believe in. And I generally boil it down to a fairly narrow, small piece, and some, you occasionally even, make fun of me for the notion that I'm a very libertarian Republican, for the reason that anytime someone argues for the use of government power for our side, it merely strengthens the argument from their side that government power can be used to achieve political ends. And I'm more nervous about the use of government power for anything than I am about trying to use it to achieve Republican ends. So as we are having this debate in this election season, we are on the verge of achieving Republican majorities in the House and Senate of the United States Congress. That's a huge achievement, because I was alive in the days where
it was 140.
We had 140. So those who decry how dark the days are currently, when we are in a bare minority here, and we're
at 211 now, or
we're
something
like even
that.
In the Senate, don't know what it really means to be in that position, and that we have been behaving like upset children, that we are not quite in charge, and yet we have significant leverage to achieve policy goals despite the fact that we're not currently the majority. And if we don't understand the lessons of 1994, for me, that 1994 lesson was that the Democrats did it well from 1928 until we finally took control again in 1980 with Ronald Reagan, effectively. They were patient and they fought carefully in small wins to move our entire society in their direction. And they've continued to learn that and understand it, so that we've got the most extreme members of Congress slowly but surely pulling this society left. And we then throw fits because we can't go from 0 to 100 in one day.
Right. Or a constitutional amendment.
Exactly.
I get told we need to do a constitutional amendment. How about we win an election?
Yeah. And so we will win some elections here. And these are going to be important wins. I actually still think we'll win a majority. But I don't think we're helping ourselves by continuing to have people describe that the events of January 6th are somehow excusable. I don't have to appreciate and agree with what occurred on January 6th at our Capitol to be able to point to what occurred the summer before and decry that as well.
That's right.
That we do not have to live by their rules, and I won't. And we need, as Republicans, to remember that we should always be gracious, especially to our fellow Republicans and conservatives, even when they don't agree with us. As long as their goals are the same, those who believe in the rule of law and have upheld it despite being beaten by conservatives ought to be appreciated, because there's nothing that matters more than the rule of law and upholding the Constitution. Even when it's your friends asking you to bend those rules to advance the conservative cause, that is not the way we win. We don't win by breaking the rules. We only win by upholding the means and the ends. Because that's what we are about.
Nice.
Character matters.
Yes, and it's what you're doing when no one's looking, which is to say exactly the point you were just making. When it's with your friends, it doesn't matter if you're bending the rules or not. It still matters, and you're teaching a lesson in that effect, too. I want to pick up on what you said about Ronald Reagan when we come right back, because the message that I think he was so good at was saying your 80% friend should never be thought of as your 20% enemy. Let's close on that when we come back.
Unquote.
continual and eternal thanks to Hugh Hallman for his friendship and for always sharing his wisdom on this show. I went to break. I think it's an important message from Ronald Reagan we all would do well to keep in mind as Republicans. He said, you know, because he understood the broadness of the Republican Party, he wasn't everyone's flavor. My gosh. He ran against a lot of people in the primaries, at least in 1979, 1980, and certainly in 1976. But he said, your 80% ally is not your 20% enemy. It does you no good to think of someone who agrees with you on 80% to blame them and continually to berate them because of that 20% they're not there on just yet. I'm going to venture to say a lot of people who were loath and slow to support Ronald Reagan probably came pretty much to 99% by the time he was all done. Anyway, Hugh.
That's certainly been my experience in elective office, was that the biggest issue was convincing people to have conversations. In the local offices, it's a lot easier to solve problems because you can take it out of the R&D debate. That's getting more difficult lately because social media is also being used to turn every issue into a zero or one, a binary choice. And that's going to damage our ability to create bench. What do I mean by that? Well, it's a sports analogy that you've really got to have a farm team and a place where you can raise up people who can be your future leaders. And we need to have conservatives elected to school boards, conservatives elected to city councils, conservatives elected to Justice of the Peace and other local offices, because that gives them the opportunity to learn how to lead and move people. We are no longer doing that in our environment because everyone wants to be involved in the national issue, the thing of the day. But that comes all the way full circle to the point you were making earlier. Will we ever have studies or information to hold people accountable? We won't, as long as we're only driven by the flavor of the day, the headline of the day, the clickbait of the day. Ladies and gentlemen, keep listening to Seth. Go to the podcast. Listen to his monologues, because that will get you some of the tools to help convince people that we need to continue to broaden our approach and win back not just House seats and Senate seats, but hearts and minds.
Thank you, Hugh. The point is the durables and the long view. That's the point, and not the shiny objects and not the flavor of the day. Bless you, sir. Godspeed. Until tomorrow, bless you all. I'm Seth Liebson, and class is dismissed.
Nailed it.
I didn't know where I was going, so I...
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.